Okay, we're ready to go. Congressman, our first question is from Gary Barrett at WHO.
Okay.
There were some people saying that Elena Kagan should have recused herself.
because she was involved in some of the decisions. How do you react to that?
Well, I do believe, and I've said publicly a number of times, that Justice Kagan should have recused herself. She helped shape the argument to try to get Obamacare written in a way that it would pass the constitutional muster. I was very surprised at the decision by Chief Justice Roberts. I think, though, he gave us an indication on Arizona's SB 1070 case that came down on Monday. And I said so in the aftermath of that. As I sometimes reference, what do I believe when the sun comes up in the morning and what are my optimistic aspirations? I believe when the sun came up Monday morning that the Supreme Court would side with Arizona and SB 1070 and conclude that they had a right and authority that was not preempted by the federal government to pass laws to direct their law enforcement officers to enforce immigration laws that mirrored federal laws or were beneath the umbrella of federal immigration laws. I was wrong in my anticipation that that would be the court's decision. I don't believe I was wrong on the constitutional decision. But I did say then on Monday that I'm now uneasy about the Obamacare decision that's scheduled to come from today. And so from Monday morning, whenever the decision came down on Arizona, until today, I've had that uneasy feeling that there had been a signal sent by Chief Justice Roberts that there wasn't going to be a sweeping, clearly, from my view, constitutional decision by the court. And I said that I think they cut the baby in half on Monday, and this time I think they discovered a taxation activity on the part of Congress that was heretofore undiscovered and that Congress didn't understand nor believe existed. It looks to me like the Supreme Court has created that as a taxing authority, at least redefined it. Now I don't know how we limit the powers of Congress. If the power to tax is the power to destroy, if the power to tax is the power to coerce any imaginable activity, we've started down a long march, I think, to that authority. But I'm disappointed, of course, in the decision, and I've said that I want to reserve my judgment of Chief Justice Roberts until such time as I've thoroughly read the decision and tried to examine his rationale to get to the conclusion that they offered today.
Thank you. If Tanya from KCAU would like to ask her question.
I don't know if you had a chance to read the statement that Kristi Zolciak released today, but she basically called on Congress to reform the Affordable Act and saying the in order to address the increasing cost of health care, and she says she's introducing 7 ideas for reform that directly benefits families in the district. If you've had a chance to read those ideas, do you have a comment on that?
Hey, I'm sorry, I picked up the receiver. I had you on speaker and I couldn't understand this. Could you repeat again what her statement is? I guess I'm surprised, first of all, that she has a statement. She hasn't had an opinion on Obamacare or the individual mandate or the Supreme Court decision all up to this point. So I'm really interested in coming back to hear it clearly.
Well, basically, a summary is that she's calling on Congress to reform the Affordable Act, saying the law would little to address the increasing cost of health care, and she's introducing basically 7 ideas for reform that directly benefits families. Some of those ideas are controlling certain premiums, protect seniors from increased out-of-pocket expenses, lower prescription drug costs. Some of those things, so, I mean, if you've had a chance to read anything, do you have a comment on what she said so far?
Well, you know, my comment would be, she has had time since this decision came down to come up with 7 ideas now in the aftermath of the Supreme Court, and all the way up to this point, she didn't have an opinion on Obamacare or the individual mandate. I wonder who wrote those in the last 2 hours and what they might be. They don't seem like they're very concrete to me. They sound like policies. We're all for lower premiums and cheaper prescription drugs for seniors and better care for seniors and the youth and everyone. So I agree with all those aspirations that I think I heard, but I can't imagine this is a serious policy that's been worked out in the last 2 hours, and it is pretty astonishing to think that one could run for Congress and not know where you stand, and all of a sudden, within a couple hours of the decision, come out with a 7-point plan. Sorry to be so blunt, but that's just what it sounds like to me.
If we can have Mike Malloy from the Ames Tribune.
Hi, Congressman. You had told me that you had been the guest of Chief Justice Roberts at the original hearing back in March, I believe. You've commented on this already, but did you had to get a sense at that time that it seemed like it was going to be going more in your direction. And are you, do you feel like this is a flip-flop for him, or did you, reaction to that of being able to sit in that room and feel that the argument was going one way and then today finding out that it went a different direction?
Well, I have, and I've said earlier today in some of my first reactions on the steps of the Supreme Court that I have great respect for Chief Justice Roberts. I personally like him, but I also, his intellect and his jurisprudence is something I've respected all along. I said I've also got uneasy since the Monday decision on SB 1070, and I've reserved, a direct criticism, and I want to be able to read the decision thoroughly and, sit there and contemplate the language that's in it and not rush to judgment. But it is, I don't want to be critical of the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. He's earned his path there, and his rationale is something I should do my very level best to understand before such time as I should. I don't want to jump to a conclusion on a man without I have that respect for him.
Sure. If I could ask one little quick follow-up. There's an estimate that about 12% of Iowans do not have health care coverage. If the repeal effort that you've been advocating for a couple of years is successful, how do you plan to address the problem of uninsured Americans?
Well, I'd be surprised if that 12% estimate actually held up once you look at the real numbers, but it may have grown since Obamacare was passed. I remember the broad national pie chart of the population of the United States at that time, about 306 million people, and the numbers that were uninsured that they gave us was about 48, I believe they said 48 million people. So once you subtracted from that, those that were in the United States illegally, those that qualified for a health insurance plan by their employer and did not accept that plan, those that made over $75,000 a year and presumably could afford their own health insurance policy, those that were eligible for Medicaid and didn't sign up, all of that, the subtraction from the 48 million took us down to 12.1 million, which is around 4% of the population. And I would expect, and Iowans are more insured, I believe, than any other state population that I know of, at least. So I don't think we have an unmanageable situation. But I would start down the path of this, that first, Congress has to act now, Mike, and repeal this Obamacare law. Another answer that came from the Supreme Court today is that it's Congress's problem, Congress needs to fix it. And that was part of the discussions in the oral arguments, and that part was very interesting to me as well. So we need to repeal it. And in the aftermath of that, and let's just look ahead to, say, February of next year, presuming that that's been accomplished. And now, with that accomplished, we need to then start down the path of one single solution at a time, incrementally, piece by piece by piece, and debate those things so that the American people can weigh in. We've got time to hear what they have to say. We've got time to make adjustments if we need to. But I would start with, and these are suggestions, and I would suggest that the American people weigh in again. But I'd say first, sell insurance across state lines. That would be my preferred first step. I think that does the most to promote competition and give people access to affordable health insurance policies. Then I'd provide 100% full deductibility for everybody's health insurance premiums and legitimate health care costs. That will bring in more of the uninsured who can't afford to buy it now because they have to buy their insurance premium with after-tax dollars. And then I would address the tort reform, which we have in this House, Representatives. That's about $210 billion a year. I think 208 was the last number that I saw, $208 billion a year in unnecessary costs in defensive medicine. And then provide for portability. The pre-existing condition component of this, Iowa does a pretty good job with this high-risk pool that we have, and I suggest that we encourage that kind of program for the states that don't have it, and it's not many. Most do have a program like that. So this isn't as bad as people might think. It doesn't pull the rug out from underneath people, as one might think. We didn't have a problem with our health insurance and lack of insurance that was great enough to upset the entire health care system and the entire health insurance system. Now we need to put that back together again and go down the path of preserving the doctor-patient relationship and allow for our doctors to receive an income off of what they're doing and let the research and development continue. Now the list of these things go on and on. Fortunately, we have a fairly large doctors' caucus in this Congress, and they're positioned to bring a lot of expertise to this, provide the momentum, and I sit in on that doctors' caucus from time to time to make sure that they take a look at it from 10,000 feet as well as inside the patient examination room.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. If you could ask Dennis.
You asking for Dennis Morris from KLM?
Yep, that's you.
All right, yep, okay, thanks. Congressman, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. I guess I would like to visit with you a little bit more about the next step now. Obviously, the Republicans in the House would like to see the bill repealed, but if the Senate is still held on to by the Democrats, it's not going to go anywhere. So I guess my real question is, what are the Republicans doing to try and get some of the people that cross over the aisle to join them and see that the health care bill needs to be reformed or refined or repealed?
Well, Dennis, it's nice to hear your voice, and I just appreciate the question. I don't know that there are Democrats in the Senate that are willing to change the position that they've taken. Now, I drafted the first repeal bill for Obamacare 2+ years ago, and immediately after the passage of it, before the president actually signed it, and pushed that through more than a year, that language came to the floor in this new Congress with new Speaker John Boehner. And the result of that was that every Republican voted to repeal Obamacare, and that was true in the House and in the Senate. The repeal passed the House, but the Senate got 47 votes. That means, I think, that we're poised for the next election, and I think it'll make a difference in the next elections. These elections, most of them, if not all of them, in the Senate will be pivoting on the repeal of Obamacare. I don't think we get that done between now and November. I think November decides the destiny of this. And I'm sorry that this is such a long, hard slog. You know, people sitting out there with indecision, we have indecision that's keeping people from developing their clinics, their hospitals, their doctor's practices, people that don't know quite what to do with buying their own health insurance policy, or should they wait until the government hands them one. That indecision is going to hang on longer now. It's at least 6 months longer. It might be longer than that. And putting this all back together is not going to be done in a matter of 6 months or 12. And I think we've got probably 2 years or perhaps three to get the pieces in place to start us on the right path, and we still will have lost probably 5 years when we could have been improving the healthcare system. But I don't think it's going to happen with Senate Democrats. I really don't. They've already drawn their line in the sand, and the voters will be the ones that make that decision. There won't be a change of heart. They're dug in too deeply, so I think there needs to be a change of senators.
Okay, if I can just have a follow-up. Are there any provisions at all to the Affordable Health Care Act, nicknamed Obamacare, any provisions at all that you would like to see maintained or established, or should it all be thrown out?
It should all be thrown out. 100% of it should be thrown out. It should be ripped out by the roots. I will not agree or accept any vestige of Obamacare being left behind, because it will grow back. And if there are provisions out there that people think are worthy of federal activity, then I would suggest they bring them as standalone pieces of legislation and see if they can pass them in the light of day. This deal was put together in Nancy Pelosi's office out behind closed doors and by legislative shenanigans. It wasn't a deal that the American people agreed to at the time, and they disagree with it even more today. Each day, the public has had more and more resistance to Obamacare. So I think we pull it all out. We start with a clean slate. That's what Mitt Romney wants. That's what I've said for a long time. That's what the Republicans said when they voted for the repeal here in the House, and it passed the House, and that's what the 47 Republicans in the Senate said. Now, one of the things that is a concern is, you know, can we get a repeal done with, say, 51 votes in the United States Senate? And that is a tougher question. I've got to go back to the rules people in the Senate to give a better informed answer. But there was a significant component of Obamacare that passed on reconciliation, and that is a language that circumvents the filibuster. I need to look at those components and see. My position would be that whatever passed the Senate around the filibuster rule that avoided the cloture vote should be able to be repealed by the same standard. And I'll be talking to the Senate experts on that. But we're going to have to undo it. And if there's something we can't get repealed because of not having a filibuster, if we have a majority in the Senate, not having a filibuster majority in the Senate, It's going to take the American people rising up and sending that message strongly, and I'm going to be asking them to do that, Dennis.
All right, thanks very much, Congressman.
Thanks, Dennis. We could have Shane from Cafe Assad.
Congressman, thank you for allowing us to speak with you this afternoon. I have a question regarding, do you see any silver lining in this ruling today at all?
You know, I don't know if I can say yes to that. Maybe the silver lining would be that the Supreme Court has ruled that the first clause is not so broad that it can encompass a coercion, but they ruled that the taxation clause is. And I think if we had lost the definition of the Commerce Clause, swallowed up all of these enumerated powers in the Constitution, and probably also swallowed up the 9th and 10th Amendments of the Constitution, this probably is a better decision if you look at it from the standpoint of the Supreme Court has identified and declared a tax that Congress didn't think existed, or we would have asserted that. But in doing so, they've avoided eviscerating and destroying and swallowing all of the enumerated powers. And so we have less scope to fight with from a constitutional standpoint, but it's a broader power that I think will be more loosely used. But in the end, I can still point to the enumerated powers in the Constitution today. I wasn't sure I could do that when I woke up this morning. So there's the bright side. We hold the enumerated powers together, but the power to tax, the power to coerce has been expanded now, and it gives Congress an authority, at least theoretically, to direct any activity and any citizen under penalty of taxation. And we should remember that when taxes are collected, if you don't pay the taxes, there's an interest that applies, a penalty that applies, and if you don't pay the tax, the interest, and the penalty, the IRS has broad and sweeping powers in the end to sell your personal property to pay that tax. So in the end, it is the IRS man knocking on your door.
Thanks, Shane. Is Jeb from KJC? I don't have it written out correctly from Eagle Grove. Sorry about that. You there?
That's okay, yes.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
Be rude up. Congressman King, how you doing?
I am doing fine. I didn't hear who I'm talking to.
Jeb Rudolph.
Oh, okay. How are you, Jay? Good to hear you.
Real good. Hey, I heard that the court also left intact the rationing, healthcare rationing aspect, and forcing people to pay for others' abortions. Is that correct?
You know, I'm getting the signal that that is correct, and I have not read that specific language, but yes is the answer we would give you from this office, Jay.
Okay. I don't really have, everybody else is doing a good job, I don't really have anything else.
Well, it troubles me that particular provision, and, you know, we saw where the Obamacare has granted the president the broad sweeping authority through the Health and Human Service, Kathleen Sebelius, kinds of things. And those sweeping powers still exist. There's in the end, I will be looking at all of these, but in the end, it's still, our marching orders need to be past the repeal of Obamacare. And as I said, I think that we will take that up right after the 4th of July and bring a full repeal to the floor of the House and pass it and send it over to Harry Reid and put it on top of the pile of bills he has on his desk. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thanks, Jay. Brett Hayworth from the Cincinnati Journal.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon.
Hi. You've sought various avenues to beat back this law. Maybe a follow-up from what Dennis was inquiring about. Is the only way now to beat back this legislation, or this act, I guess, if Republicans gain the presidency and control of both federal chambers, and perhaps even 60 in the Senate? Is that what you were saying? You were talking about filibuster. Were you... You didn't say 60, but I think maybe that's what you were hinting at.
That is what I was speaking to, Brett. And
does it take all those, the presidency and control of both chambers, with the 60?
I think we can get a lot of it done without 60 votes in the Senate, but it takes the presidency, a majority in the Senate, and a majority in the House, willing majority, I should say. And parts of this bill will not be repealed without breaking the filibuster. And that, as I recall, is passage in the configuration by which it came to us. There is another means to do this, and it isn't a repeal means, but it stops the implementation enforcement. And you've heard me talk about it a year and a couple, 3 months ago, I guess a year and 5 months ago, on if the House will start all spending. If we say no on spending, then the spending won't take place. And I tried mightily to cut off all funding to implement or enforce Obamacare, I lost in that struggle here in the House, and that's another means to shut it off, but it's not a means to repeal. So even if we were able to shut off the funding to implement or enforce, the implementation of it would atrophy over time, but we'd have to hold our resolve year after year, and eventually the majorities would change, and the law would be in place, and they would activate it and bring it back up again. So I think the scenario you've given is the right one. We have the majority in the House and the Senate and the President and the presidency to repeal, and to come short of that filibuster proof, we're going to have a handful of Democrats that might decide that they like getting reelected and the people in their state oppose Obamacare perhaps as much as I do. That'd be another scenario, but it'll be tough. We shouldn't ask the Supreme Court to do our work for us. Congress made a bad decision, and the court has handed it back to us, and now, as tough as it's going to be, we have to take on that job and do the right thing for the American people. There's a disagreement on what that is, but it's not a disagreement, I don't think, on the majority of the American people want Obamacare fully repealed.
If I could, you'd allow me to, you said this is the number one issue of our time, and that Mitt Romney should have this as his number one plank. Do you think he'll grab onto that?
I think it's his number one plank. I think it's more so his number one plank today than it was even yesterday.
Okay.
And so that's how I would look at it right now, Brett. And I don't see any hesitation on the part of Mitt Romney. If I heard his press conference right, he said that he's ready to go forward with a full 100% repeal of Obamacare. And when that's done, begin replacing it with these rational programs, many of which I've mentioned in our press conference here within the last few minutes.
I've been chatting with a few people here today and was curious about your input on this. Looking back over your lifetime, if you go back from today, finish the sentence, I guess this is the most important Supreme Court ruling since, what case would you say?
73 Roe versus Wade.
You go that? Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard that voice by other people. That's definitely.
I've been thinking about that, Brett, for you know, weeks, if not months.
Uh-huh.
Probably months, but you know, I could see this decision was going to come down.
Uh-huh.
Before the court even accepted it, that they would hear the case, I had looked back on that and thought about it in its magnitude. I think that holds up. And I can't imagine going to law school and studying case law and the history of the Supreme Court decisions and not having Obamacare being one of the essential decisions that everybody in constitutional law will be studying. And so the answer is yes. That's sweeping. It's big as it can be. And, you know, it just leaves a sick feeling in your stomach to be standing on the steps of the Supreme Court building and absorbing that piece of information, conflicting opinions, and then having it settle in a way that it did, that there's a new power that's been identified by the Supreme Court, the power of unlimited taxation and coercion. We haven't absorbed what all that means yet, but it's going to take for months to understand that, and I think it's going to take years of litigation to sort it out.
Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, and if we could have Kevin Hall from the Iowa Republican. You there, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Congressman, you touched on this a little bit, but just looking ahead to the November elections, what kind of impact do you think today's ruling is going to have on the races for House, the races for the Senate, and, of course, the presidency?
Well, I think that it'll be this. I think of, for example, in Iowa, Bruce Braley gave the closing arguments in favor of Obamacare. He was chosen by Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, to give that closing argument before it passed. I think that puts him in a more vulnerable position for re-election in that district, that somewhat new district in Northeast Iowa. So I would look at that and say that's more likely a pickup seat for Republicans. I think that also Dave Loebstack's seat is, threatened more than it was otherwise. I think Tom Latham is more likely to get re-elected, and I think Steve King's more likely to get re-elected. I think Barack Obama's less likely to win Iowa. And the four of the five scenarios that David Axelrod has planned that add up to 270 electoral votes for Barack Obama, Iowa is a must-win state. And I think Iowa has just taken a lean towards Mitt Romney. So from an electoral standpoint, this is good news, but I don't like to get good news with such a high constitutional price.
Thanks, Kevin. If there's anyone who's called in who I didn't get their name, they would like to ask a question.
Kay. This is Kay Henderson at Radio Iowa.
Okay.
I'm wondering, so based on your statements in the past few minutes, you think that this particular issue will be the deciding issue in your race with Christy Vilsack?
Well, it's the most important issue, and yes, I think it will be for the voters. They will look at this and think that, you know, I'm going to presume that I'm presuming Christy Vilsack's position is in support of Obamacare and in support of, you know what kind of decision that she took, no position on Obamacare, no position on the individual mandate. Now we have a Supreme Court that's ruled the individual mandate's constitutional, if it's not if it's under the Commerce Clause, but if it's taxed, then they declare it to be a tax. I think everybody should be surprised that Christy Vilsack now has an opinion and dozen different plans or components to roll out here, and I've not seen them in print, so I should reserve a little judgment there. But Iowans already have gone to the polls in fear of the overreach of the federal government. And now that the Supreme Court has said, we're not going to protect you Americans from the overreach of your Congress, you've elected this Congress, they have done what they've done, you unelect the Congress and put people in there that do what you want them to do. That was Nancy Pelosi and her majority that were voted out of office. And so certainly Christy Vilsack has said that she wants to get elected into Congress to help also help Barack Obama be reelected and support his agenda. There's nothing more Barack Obama's agenda than Obamacare itself. So I think it is a pivotal issue. And if I were on the wrong side of Obamacare, I would expect to be voted out of office. And if I were on the wrong side of Obamacare, I surely wouldn't be expected to be an incumbent to be sent to Congress.
Thanks, Kate. Anyone else that didn't get us a question? Okay, thank you so much for calling. Have a great day.
Yes, I couldn't hear all your names when you were introduced, but I recognized almost everybody's voice, so that tells me something about our relationship with the media. Anybody that's online, thanks for being online.